from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Humans lock up animals for human education and entertainment, but is there a limit? Zoos have become more open. Now there's a push to ban, by law, the holding of killer whales, orcas, in captivity for entertainment. A bill's been filed in California, home of SeaWorld, the world's biggest orca show company. And there's a fight on. This hour on Point, a bill to ban performing orcas. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What do you say? Keep them entertaining? End the shows? Set them free? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. We will get all the details of the California fight in this hour. We'll hear from a defender of the SeaWorld shows. But first, to the big case against performing orcas in captivity. Joining me from Washington is Tim Zimmerman, a producer and co-writer on the documentary film Blackfish, a 2013 Sundance Film Festival entrant that got huge exposure on CNN and is very critical of the treatment of orcas in captivity. He's also a correspondent for Outside magazine. His 2010 piece for Outside, The Killer in the Pool, was part of the inspiration for Blackfish. We talked about it on this show back in the at the time. Tim, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Hello, Tom. Glad to be with you to talk orcas.
And with us from Washington is Naomi Rose, marine mammal scientist at the Animal Welfare Institute. It's a nonprofit group that advocates for the rights and protection of animals. The organization was a sponsor on the new California bill, which Naomi helped to write. Naomi Rose, welcome to On Point.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
It's great to have you both right here. Here's a little sound from just earlier this month. This was on Santa Monica Pier, a press conference announcing new legislation put forward by California Assemblyman Richard Bloom. He said after watching the documentary Blackfish, he decided things around orcas had to change.
It's my belief and the belief of a growing number of scientists that orcas do not belong in captivity. They're just not suitable to be kept in captivity.
But it's a big business, and there's a lot of push to keep them. It's big business in San Diego, just for starters, in California, home of SeaWorld. At that same press conference, John Hargrove, a former SeaWorld trainer, said the use of orcas for entertainment is hurtful to orcas and the trainers.
This is about greed, and this is about corporate exploitation, both of the whales and the trainers, but most importantly, the whales.
Tim Zimmerman, you paid a lot of attention to Blackfish. Naomi Rose, you helped put it together, helped put this legislation together. Naomi, first to you, what's the problem? I mean, we get it. Everybody is, or many have seen Free Willy. Nobody thinks it's great for big animals to be in captivity. On the other hand, we've done it with a lot of animals for a lot of years, with orcas in particular. And what goes on in the entertainment arenas where they are held? What's the problem, Naomi?
Well, these are very wide-ranging, very intelligent, very long-living, very socially complex, and very intelligent predators in the marine environment. With a lot of zoo species, you can try to simulate their habitat, but if anybody who's been to SeaWorld, you know, will very well know, what you can give an orca in captivity is a swimming pool. It's an extremely monotonous, boring environment for an extremely intelligent, socially complex animal. And yes, SeaWorld's been doing it for 50 years, and the whole point is they've been keeping certain information from the public very effectively for those 50 years. Blackfish outed a lot of that information. I've known about it for a very long time because I'm an orca biologist, and I study these animals in the wild, and it is just not possible to provide adequately for them.
What did we learn in Blackfish, Naomi, that we didn't know about orcas in captivity?
I think a lot of people didn't realize that SeaWorld routinely separates calves from their mothers. SeaWorld is pushing back on that, saying we never do that. No, they don't take newborn calves, but these are animals that stay together for life. If you take a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old calf from its mother, you are taking away a toddler. These are animals that stay together well into adulthood. Sons live with their mothers for their whole lives. That was the subject of my PhD dissertation. So I know
in
that
the wild they live together for their whole lives, like a family that never breaks up.
Absolutely.
It's pretty amazing. And what else did we learn in this film about, I mean, the big ban here is on performing, right? It's not on captivity itself, despite what we heard the assemblyman say.
Well, the whole point is there's 10 animals in California right now, most of whom are born in captivity. We're not trying to be romantic and idealistic here. These are animals' lives we're dealing with. We want to do something that is realistic and sensible and, quite frankly, possible economically and biologically. So we're not talking about letting them all go, you know, into the wide ocean tomorrow. We're talking about giving them a dignified retirement, which means that by federal law, they will be on public display. People can visit them in retirement. I think that would be a huge draw.
Tim Zimmerman, is it the performing part is being would be banned under this? And of course, there's resistance already. It's a very big business. It employs almost 1,500 people in San Diego alone, and that's of course not the only SeaWorld place around the country. But this is California law. What exactly would be banned here, Tim?
Well, the use of killer whales for entertainment and shows would be banned. And also breeding in marine parks would be banned in California, as well as the transfer of either sperm or for artificial insemination that's used for breeding, as well as transport of orcas in and out of California.
So in other words, there'd be no more Shamu show under this.
That's right. This would be the end of the Shamu show. And what's interesting about this legislation is blackfish has made, as Naomi and you alluded to, many more people aware of the reality of the lives of killer whales at SeaWorld. And that phase now seems to be entering into going past awareness to a movement with a bill such as Richard Bloom has proposed that starts to transition marine parks away from killer whale entertainment. And this is by far the most concrete reason that SeaWorld has yet to start thinking about its business model and the long-term viability of its business model, which is based on killer whale entertainment and shows.
I'm looking here at something, 50-plus orcas in captivity around the world, about half those, 24 or so in the United States, all but one at SeaWorld locations. Naomi, take us further into the issue with performing. You're saying you're not looking to set them free. Why? Because they couldn't live in the wild once they've been in captivity? Is that the deal, Naomi?
Well, I think some animals who've been in captivity can be returned to the wild if they were caught in the wild and their families are known. This is so important to orcas versus, say, bottlenose dolphins, that their families, not just their population, but their families be known, that unless we know who their families are, I think it would be very difficult, if not impossible, to return them to independence in the wild. But several of the orcas in San Diego were born there. They were born in captivity, and they learn so much of what they do in the wild. They are creatures of culture. They learn their own languages. They learn how to forage from their mothers. So these animals never learned how to be wild. So I think it's a bit romantic and not in the best welfare interests of the animal to think about returning them to the wild. But all of them can be retired to natural sea pen enclosures that, as Tim said, this is a new idea, a new business model that I think SeaWorld could pioneer.
Now, help us understand, if they're going to be not set free but in captivity, just make it explicit why you think performing is a bad idea. Somebody might say, well, it gives them something to do. They're captive. At least they can, you know, splash.
Oh, absolutely. We're not talking about ending interaction between trainers and the animals.
Well, what does it mean to ban entertainment then, to ban performing orcas?
Have you ever been to a SeaWorld show?
Yes, years ago. Years ago.
Did you find anything educational about it?
It's an education to see the scale of that animal up close, and it's incredibly close there. But my question is, exactly what would be forbidden under this law that they're doing now?
What they are right now are circus shows. The whales and dolphins that are in captivity are the last holdouts in the entire zoo community where they have to perform for their supper. You know, we don't have chimpanzees riding tricycles anymore. We don't have bears dancing anymore. We don't have tigers jumping through flaming hoops anymore in zoos. Only in circuses. But SeaWorld calls itself a zoo, and so it shouldn't be having these animals perform. Yes, they should be interacted with by their trainers. Yes, they need to be trained for husbandry and veterinary behaviors, and that's actually quite educational when that is explained to the audience. In some of the shows that SeaWorld has, they don't even tell you what species you're looking at. I don't find that in any way of value to the animal. If what we're doing here is trying to help the animal in the wild, trying to help conservation, trying to educate people about the needs of these animals in the wild, not telling people the truth, not telling them how long they live or how tight their family bonds are, is not going to help them.
How would the holding pens or their environments change, have to change under this law if it were enacted in California?
Right.
What would change?
The pens would actually be in the ocean, so at least they would have natural seawater, they would have some fish swimming through, they would have kelp, they would have far more stimulation, there would be more room. I don't think people understand how small the tanks are at SeaWorld from the animals' perspective. They are tiny, and these are huge animals. So the sea pens would be much, much larger. The larger the sea pens, the less direct control the trainers will have over them. So the show would probably be impossible anyway. But you can continue to interact with them. You can continue to keep them under a certain amount of training so that they can be cared for by veterinary standards. And people would find that interesting, I think.
Tim, would you just let them go or not? You can't do it?
No, you just can't let them go. Mm-hmm. I mean, they would likely not survive. There was people are probably familiar with the effort to return Keiko to the wild. And that was an extraordinarily complex operation, which had, you know, benefits and also had its downside. Ultimately, Keiko did not survive on
his own. That's the Free Willy movie story.
Free Willy whale. But one thing I'd just like to add that's incredibly important to remember also, a lot of what Blackfish is about is really trying to make people more aware of how confining and how sterile life in a marine park is for a killer whale. And it's very easy to underestimate what an extraordinary transition it would be for a killer whale to move from a sea whirlpool into a natural pen, and how incredibly stimulating it would be for that killer whale to suddenly hear sounds that that killer whale has never heard or hasn't heard for decades. I think that Naomi, who worked on the Keiko project, could probably tell you the difference when Keiko went into the sea pen in Iceland and his response to the stimulation of that natural environment from people I've spoken to was extraordinary.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. The sound there of a group of wild orcas in Puget Sound off the coast of Washington State. They stick together. They're enormous. 10,000 pounds plus, easy. Strong pod connections for decades of life in the wild. We're talking this hour about a California bill that would ban keeping orcas, killer whales, in captivity for entertainment. Ban performing orcas. It's controversial. SeaWorld is big in its locations around the country and very big in its home state of California, San Diego. Millions and millions of people have seen the shows over the years. We've been joined by Naomi Rose. She's at the Animal Welfare Institute, a marine mammal scientist there in Washington, consulted on the bill that is now what has been introduced in California. Tim Zimmerman is with us from Outside Magazine, correspondent there, producer, co-writer for the documentary Blackfish. CNN gave it a big showing in recent months. Here's a little bit in this scene from the documentary film. Orca researcher Howard Garrett explaining what harvesting of orcas from the wild was like in the 1970s.
They had aircraft, they had spotters, they had speedboats, they had bombs they were throwing in the water. They were lighting their bombs with acetylene torches in their boats and throwing them as fast as they could to herd the whales into coves. But the orcas had been caught before, and they knew what was going on, and they knew their young ones would be taken from them.
So they weren't happy about it. But some ended up in captivity. Big shows. Here's 2013 performance of the Shamu story at SeaWorld San Diego.
It is our pleasure to present to you the Shamu story.
We've all seen it. They are enormous. In that little tank there with the audience around, the big splash, the big wow, it's pretty incredible to see. Naomi Rose, Tim Zimmerman, please stand by. With us right now from Phoenix, Arizona, is Grace Stafford, animal trainer, zoologist, director of the conservation at the Wildlife World Zoo and Aquarium in Phoenix. He worked as a marine mammal trainer at SeaWorld Ohio, 1990 to 1995. That's now closed. He's author of Zoomility, Keeper Tales of Training with Positive Reinforcement. He is a spokesman for the Alliance of Marine Mammal Parks and Aquariums. That's an international association of marine life parks, aquariums, zoos, research facilities. Grace Stafford, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Great to be with you.
So presumably SeaWorld is a very big presence in the Alliance of Marine Mammal Parks and Aquariums. What's the SeaWorld view, the Alliance view of this move? We don't know how far it's going to go, but this legislation proposed in California to shut down the performing of orcas.
Well, Tom, I think I speak for my colleagues, and let me just be clear. I don't work for SeaWorld any longer. I don't get paid by them to speak on their behalf. I find this a very important issue personally and professionally, and that's why I'm here this today.
Yeah.
But the reality is that this bill is rather short-sighted because, as you alluded to with your earlier guests, not only has SeaWorld provided, you know, great economic benefit to Southern California, but for the last 50 years, they have provided us with incredible insight into all sorts of marine mammals, the California sea lions that need to be cared for when they wash up on shore each year, as well as bottlenose dolphins and, of course, orca whales. So much of what we understand about sea life, because they live in distant, deep waters, comes to us from places like SeaWorld. And if we're going to preserve them, we certainly have to understand what their needs are, what their behavior and biology are.
Why the performing part? I mean, you've got wonderful aquariums around the world. You know that. I mean, in California, Monterey Bay is incredible. They have big crowds, and they're not the only one in the country. Why performing orcas as part of that, Gray?
Well, Tom, you know, I work with wildlife conservation, and in my opinion, it's important for us to capture the hearts and minds of our audience because we need to motivate 7 billion consumers to do a better job of caring for our planet and preserving what's left of it. And those entertainment shows, which was really kind of harped on earlier in the show, you know, that's just one part of the component of the animal training that these animals experience. And it's meant to entertain, sure, but it's also meant to inspire young people to do something about it, about our world, and to preserve it. And there are educational messages, not just in the show itself, but in educational graphics like you'd see at any zoo and aquarium. There are on-site educators that talk about the animals in a more informal setting, and they're available to answer questions. And, of course, places like SeaWorld and other zoos and aquariums entertain roughly, you know, tens of thousands of students each and every year in each city that they're located in. So there's a lot of education going on, and if we just tease out the few minutes a day that they're actually engaged in a more of an entertainment format, I think that undersells all the educational value that's going on.
What about, there are many things that we could do, I guess, for education and entertainment that we don't because we consider them inhumane or cruel. What about the charge that it is essentially cruel to keep these enormous, beautiful creatures in such confined spaces dancing for their supper, Gray?
Well, Tom, as you mentioned, I am a physiologist. One of the things that breaks down quickly when animals, when we aren't meeting their needs, either in the wild or in human care, one of the first luxuries, if you will, to go is the ability to reproduce and to successfully rear young into adulthood. And obviously, SeaWorld has been very successful over the last 20 years in particular in raising killer whales. And in fact, the vast majority of the animals in their care right now were born at a SeaWorld facility.
And what does that mean in terms of the charge that it's cruel for them to be kept and performing in this way?
Well, again, I think there's a misconception about the nature of the training program. I wish I could go back and tell you how my first year at SeaWorld in Ohio was. I would go into this essentially training bubble, 8 hours, 10 hours a day, and figure out ways in which I could make the lives of my animals even better through mental and physical stimulation, games, as a consequence of them interacting with us and showing us their body parts and their pecs and their dorsal fin and their tail flukes and allowing us to collect biological samples like voluntary blood draws. And then I would go home at night and I would use traditional training methods with my puppy because I didn't see the connection between the two. Well, fortunately, since then, we've realized that, wow, we can teach so many amazing behaviors with these animals through cooperation, through mutual trust, through positive reinforcement. What that means is if the animals choose to participate in programs, obviously we want to reinforce those behaviors. If they choose to swim away and do something else with some of their other conspecifics, that's fine too. They're still going to get their caloric intake every single day.
Choose to participate. I don't know, voluntary blood draw, some of the language. I don't know, when you're in captivity, what's a choice? But Gray, it's very interesting to have your perspective here. I'm glad you're here. Naomi, Tim, stand by. Lots of callers for this. We want to get into the detail. Rumney is calling from Sheridan, Massachusetts. Rumney, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm okay. What do you know here?
So I have seen the Shamu show in California. I watched it with my oldest son, and it was absolutely heartwarming. I thought it was the most amazing show on earth. I couldn't wait for my younger son to take my younger son to share this with him. But then we watched Blackfish and as a family, and it's the most heart-wrenching, and we refuse to ever be part of any of that.
Why? What did you see in the documentary that turned your thinking that way, Rumney?
It's just everything. The most important thing is not knowing. It's like, you know, if you don't understand a group of humans, you don't really know. You think, you theorize, you know, what if? What if we take a bunch of humans that are very different from us and put us in a situation and make a sideshow out of them? So that's pretty much what we felt.
So you're done with those shows after seeing this. Rumney, I appreciate your call. Tim Zimmerman, for listeners who haven't seen Blackfish, the documentary, remind us, at the heart of this story is one particular male orca, Tilikum, 10, 11,000, 12,000 pounds, who was associated with three deaths and has had a pretty tough time in captivity. What's the heart of that story, Tim?
Well, the heart of the story is, as you say, Tilikum's story. It was an effort, Blackfish was an effort to explain why it was that he might have been involved in three human deaths, culminating in the death of SeaWorld trainer Don Brancho in 2010. And along the way, it tells people or explains to people the conditions under which he grew up in captivity. He's been in captivity for about 30 years now. And it explains also the conditions that all killer whales live at SeaWorld and in captivity. And I think that what was powerful about it was that SeaWorld, for 50 years, they're having their 50-year anniversary this year, you know, gave a narrative of Shamu that was, you know, very positive. And Blackfish offered people an alternative narrative that was very different. And I think the difference between what SeaWorld has been saying for 50 years and showing people for 50 years and what Blackfish was telling people about the lives of killer whales was extremely different and therefore shocking to people.
There's a suggestion that Tilikum, this big bull orca, was kind of driven crazy by his experience in captivity. Why? How?
Well, I mean, he came from the wild when he was about 2 years old. So Naomi talked about how killer whales, especially killer whale males, stay with their mothers for most of their lives, if not their whole lives. So he was separated from his family and his mother at about the age of two. He went to a marine park in Canada where food was withheld from him if he didn't perform correctly, and where the two females there were very aggressive with him and beat on him quite frequently.
They were not part of his pod, his family.
They were not part of his family, and the situation in that marine park was so unstimulating. Anytime anything came into the pool, the killer whales would race for it and grab it and play with it and keep it away. Unfortunately, one of a young apprentice trainer, Kelty Byrne, slipped and fell halfway into the pool and was pulled in by the killer whales, who killed her in their excitement to have something different in the pool with them. He then went to SeaWorld, where he continued to get suffer from aggression from other females, spent a lot of time alone. He ended up a drifter, you know, snuck into the SeaWorld at night and somehow ended up in his tank. Tilikum killed that man, and then ultimately he killed Don Brancho as well. And so coming out of it all, I mean, the thing that really comes home for me about the difference between captivity and the wild is, Gray Stafford correctly, you know, he mentions that SeaWorld is very successful at breeding killer whales in captivity. I could say that there are probably zoos in other places that are pretty horrific that also succeed in breeding their animals. But the most important takeaways from Blackfish, and for me, was that in captivity, the killer whales don't live as long. There's much more aggression between them, and there's also aggression against the trainers. And for me, that's what you need to know that tells you the real story of what life in a marine park is like for these killer whales.
Here's a little bit from the documentary Blackfish. This is from a promotional video, actually, for the SeaWorld show Believe, and it's featuring the trainer, Don Brancho, who ultimately would be killed by Tilikum. But here she is before her death, explaining why she loves performing with orcas.
Gosh, do I love coming out here every day and having the audience just love what we're doing with the animals. How do I make this animal as beautiful as they are and have people walk away loving this animal, and they're touched and they're moved, and I feel like I made a difference to them.
A wonderful young trainer there, Don Brancho, and here on February 24th, 2010, SeaWorld Orlando orca Tilikum attacked Don during a performance. Here's an unidentified witness describing what she saw in that attack, 2010, to CBS News.
She was standing on the rocks right above the viewing area. He jumped out, he took off, and then he came back, he jumped off, grabbed her, started thrashing around, and then her shoe fell off. I mean, he was thrashing her around pretty good. It was violent.
She died. Naomi, how much should we take from the Tilikum story here? Is this just a, you know, one unusual, difficult, sad orca, or are there broader lessons?
There are much broader lessons. Tilikum's life was particularly difficult. It wasn't SeaWorld's fault that he was treated the way he was at Sealand, but they have perpetuated the problem by keeping him in relative isolation. He usually only has one or two other animals with him, and using him as a breeding bull. But he is not the only animal who is killed. Quito, who was born in captivity at SeaWorld and is now living in Spain, he's still owned by SeaWorld, also killed his trainer. He rammed a young man named Alexis Martinez at the marine park Loro Parque in Tenerife, Canary Islands, just 9 weeks before Don Brancho was killed. He is not related to Tilikum. He does not carry Tilikum's genes, and he killed. Dozens of whales have been involved in dozens of incidents that have sent trainers to the hospital. There have been 4 deaths, 3 by Tilikum, 1 by Quito, and dozens of accidents or incidents or attacks that have led to hospitalization. This is not a one-off.
Tony in Louisville, Kentucky. Tony, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I'm extremely conflicted about this because orcas have been my favorite animals ever since I was a child. I've cared about their conservation long before Blackfish came out and about their care. But if it weren't for SeaWorld and me visiting there as a child, that never would have happened.
So what's the bottom line? You're conflicted, but how do you vote if you're in this California Assembly, Tony?
Oh, goodness. I honestly don't know. I have to think back to how magical and amazing that moment was for me as a child. And when I see something like Blackfish, it changes everything.
Yeah.
I'd like to offer Tony a compromise solution, which I think he would be good with. I mean, what the bill is proposing to move SeaWorld killer whales into a natural environment where he could, as a young man, or take his son, go visit them and also be inspired by them, but they wouldn't be engaged in these circus performances, and they perhaps would be engaged in research and other things that are interesting for people to observe. I mean, maybe that would offer him both a way to see killer whales, be inspired by killer whales, as well as to feel good about how they're being kept or better about how they're being kept.
Grace Stafford, what about it? Can you have them in pens in the ocean but visible from the shore or from a viewing stands there even? Would that work for SeaWorld, for those in captivity already who cannot be let go? Would it work, Gray?
I don't think it'll work for a variety of reasons. And, Tom, I got to say, there have been so many things in the last several minutes that need to be addressed, but obviously we don't have time for
it. Oh, you will. You're with us. We'll come and hear it.
The first I would say is we need to get away from this assumption that Blackfish is a documentary. With all due respect to Tim, the reality is if you look at any third-party critique of the film, there are plenty of fallacies in the film. There's plenty of opportunities where the filmmakers could have been a little more truthful in their presentation, but they used a more sensational route and included information that is patently false. As far as the CPEN issue goes, you know, putting the animals in coastal environments is not without risk, as Dr. Rose can tell you. I mean, there are toxins in the water, there are pathogens in the water, there are foreign objects in the water, and as far as your question about the economic model, well, I think that's a little Pollyanna. I don't think that's going to work. I don't think it will be sustainable. And my worry in all of this, if this bill passes and if the logical progression continues where we don't have places like SeaWorld anymore for Tony and his family, is that these animals in the wild will suffer as a result. This kind of debate and discussion is important, but let's not forget what's happening in our world right now. We are carving up the planet, including its oceans, into little packages that we are using up all the resources.
Yeah, the natural environment can be difficult, too. We absolutely get that. Grace Stafford, we want to learn more. Please stick with us there. Tim Zimmerman, Naomi Rose, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Sound of a group of wild orcas here communicating, collected by Howard Garrett at the Orca Network in Washington. They're in the wild. We're talking this hour about a California bill that would ban keeping orcas, killer whales, in captivity for entertainment. Ban performing orcas. SeaWorld is big business, $1.5 billion nearly most recently from its places around the U.S. Here's a SeaWorld commercial from the 1980s advertising the dolphins, whales, and animals, Shamu included, you can see at SeaWorld.
Flubbery dolphins and flubbery whales, big fluffy flippers and short fluffy tails. I like getting splashed by my friend Shamu.
world. I like whiskery walruses, big scary sharks, fun things to play on and sea lions that bark. I like the squeeze at flamingo knees. Best of all, I like SeaWorld.
SeaWorld ad from the 1980s, and it's still big business, going strong. With us right now, from San Diego, California, where you have the California SeaWorld, is Tony Perry. He's Los Angeles Times San Diego Bureau Chief. Tony, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
So here you've got an assemblyman from up the coast in Santa Monica who's put this bill out there. How's it being received in San Diego, home of SeaWorld, Tony?
Very, very poorly. In San Diego, SeaWorld is big business, 4.4 million people a year, $14 million a year in rent to the city, a lot of sales tax, a major part of the tourist economy. Among the officialdom, this bill is being received very poorly. The San Diego City Council will oppose it. The Board of Supervisors will oppose it. The Chamber of Commerce will oppose it. There will be lots of official opposition. SeaWorld has hired a high-powered lobbyist. The city of San Diego has a lobbyist up there. So this bill will face a pretty strong headwind to get any movement in Sacramento. And the new assembly speaker, the most powerful person in the state assembly,
yes,
Tony Atkins, is from San Diego. SeaWorld is in her district.
Oh.
So a junior member of her party, the Democratic Party, has introduced a bill that would strike at the financial heart of the speaker's district. This bill has a heavy headwind coming at it to get anywhere in Sacramento.
Tony, SeaWorld pays some cash payment directly to the city of San Diego each year. How much and what for?
About $14 million a year. SeaWorld rents the property that it is on from the city of San Diego. The only one of the SeaWorlds or the related parks that the same organization owns that does that, that doesn't own their own property. At a city council meeting last week, there was reference to the 50-year partnership between SeaWorld and the city.
Being celebrated this year.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Mm-hmm. Indeed, the city council last week anointed March as SeaWorld Month to proclaim the 50th anniversary. Tony Atkins, the soon-to-be speaker of the state assembly, was a featured speaker at a big celebration at SeaWorld later in the week. A lot of support for SeaWorld's opposition to this bill here in San Diego.
And Tony, what about the argument that what we witness, as thrilling as it is, and it is thrilling, they are, by all agreement, beautiful, beautiful creatures. What about the depiction of this as simply cruel?
That argument has been around. While Blackfish demonstrated it very provocatively, very persuasively for a lot of people, mm-hmm. that argument is not new in San Diego. It has been the focus of any number of feature stories in the local press through the years. We had an incident in San Diego in which a trainer was injured. The state agency involved with occupational safety investigated that. Lots of coverage of that. So the issue of the treatment of the orcas is not new here in San Diego. Also, SeaWorld has come out fighting with all sorts of public relations, a website saying that Blackfish got it all wrong and that they are really the keepers of the flame when it comes to treating these animals well. You know, pay your money and take your chances on this and on what you believe. Also, as one of your callers pointed out, a lot of people have gone to SeaWorld over the years and been enthralled by these animals and found them something that they want to help protect and be part of. And SeaWorld pushes that idea that they are an educational institution. They're also for-profit, that teaches people, young people in particular, children, mm-hmm. The wonders of the ocean and our need to be stewards of those wonders.
Tony Perry in San Diego, please stand by. Stacia is calling from California, Oakland, California. Hi, Stacia, you're on the air. Thanks for calling. What do you think?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I, too, have a love and a passion for the orca whales. In fact, so much that one summer, I took a summer off once to become a marine naturalist.
Wow.
And I just would like to speak to SeaWorld's economic model and let them know that as a mother, we very specifically have chosen not to take our family to SeaWorld, because rather than be enthralled with these animals performing, we're actually appalled. And so we talked about the program as we were on our way to school, and my daughter said, somebody needs to tell these people that it's not okay.
What's appalling to you, Stacia? What do you find appalling?
I think anyone who's ever seen or been drawn to these majestic, intelligent, social animals can very clearly see that it is cruel to have them doing jumps and twirls, and it's not in alignment. It's not in accordance with the spirit of that animal.
Stacia, I appreciate your call very much. Thank you for calling from Oakland, California. One from the opposite side of the country here, Mystic, Connecticut. Jack, you're on, Jack.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to make the point that I feel like I don't need to see, you know, elephants performing for me or orcas for that matter in order to want to save them. I don't need them to, do jumps and that kind of thing in order to want to, you know, feel like I need to protect them.
So you don't have to have them jumping right in front of you to feel, so you're environmentally minded. What about people who aren't, Jack? Do you think that the orcas in captivity might get them thinking in a more environmental protective way?
To be honest with you, I think in today's day and age with, the ability to get on the internet and view things through YouTube and such, I just don't feel like I need to be there live in person.
Yeah. Yeah,
to make those kind of judgments.
Yeah, Jack, I appreciate your call. One more right here, Brandon in New York City. Brandon, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I'm actually a science journalist who's written about this quite a bit, and I just wanted to say that I've noticed a tremendous disjunction between how passionate people become about orcas and dolphins in captivity and how little those same people seem to notice the plight of whales and dolphins in the wild. If I write about a couple dozen orcas at SeaWorld, there's a tremendous outpouring of audience concern and outrage. But if I write about the 300,000 whales and dolphins who get killed every year in shipping collisions or tangled up in fishing nets, the response is really minimal. And I'm not sure why this is, but I would love to see people and animal advocates care as much about wild animals as they do captive ones.
Brandon, that is a really interesting point. What does it leave you thinking about those in captivity and their performing requirements and all the rest? For it, against it, educational, it might help or not?
Well, the idea that aquariums can provide a good, fulfilling life for orcas is just risible. I think to say that is to ignore what we know about their emotions, their intelligence, and their behavior in the wild. It's not fundamentally different from keeping a human in a cage. Whether that's worth the inspiration it gives to people is a decision that people can make for themselves.
Brandon, I appreciate your call. Naomi, you're listening there in Washington, and I wonder. Thank you very much, Brandon. Naomi, Tony Perry says, you've got San Diego, up in arms here because it's a big business. It's well-connected. The Speaker of the Assembly has SeaWorld in her district. Is this a quixotic introduction of this bill?
Thanks for that. No, I don't think it is. I think that Assemblyman Bloom has given this some good thought. He has spoken to the Speaker. We are going to obviously take this very seriously and not assume it's a slam dunk. I just wanted to respond to the last caller, as well as a point Gray made and Tony made. Mm-hmm. The fact is that if you are trying to tell the truth about biology or conservation out there in the ocean with lies, with misinformation about the biology of the very creature you're trying to use as an ambassador, then what you're telling them is a lie. People do not learn to appreciate what these animals need in the wild by seeing them in captivity. They think that because they're being told these animals are happy in captivity and are content in captivity, and that SeaWorld or other facilities like it are working on conservation in the wild, that they've done their duty by paying the entrance fee, and they're not going to be terribly concerned about the ocean when they go home at night. And I think that the previous caller made that very clear. Why aren't people concerned about the 300,000 animals that are entangled in fishing gear every year? Because SeaWorld has basically anesthetized them to worrying about that sort of thing.
What about the issue with sea pens near the shore? Another issue Gray raised, and I wanted to get your response on it, that there may be danger there, toxins, effluent from the shore, you know, there's safety issues right there. What about it?
Well, you can't have your cake and eat it too. Either the public display industry is being really effective at reaching the quote unquote millions and millions of people that they claim to be educating and inspiring, or they're not, and the ocean is getting worse and worse, and our conservation dilemma that we're facing with the oceans is quite severe. It is, in fact, the latter. The situation out in the ocean is getting worse. Mm-hmm. And so I think that SeaWorld and that places like it are part of the problem, not part of the solution. I think that sea pens, although certainly water quality will be an issue, we need to locate these sanctuaries or refuges in adequate and appropriate places. But there are sea pen facilities in the captive industry all around the world. I hope that Gray isn't saying that all of these fellow facilities and his association are being, you know, harmful to the animals.
Gray Stefford, what about that point that if it's an educational mission, you could say it's failed because we have oceans in more trouble than they were?
I would say that's absurd. And I
absurd? Look around at the oceans, my friend.
Your conclusion that SeaWorld is somehow to blame for that.
No, I'm just asking on the educational mission, is it working?
Let me respond. First of all, your last caller, the first half of his point, was spot on. There is a disconnect between the empathy and the connections that people have with animals they see in zoos and aquariums with what's going on with wild populations. And there's a real reason, and there's a real challenge for zoos and aquariums. I will give you that, because historically, public display has been about displaying individual animals. And humans, given our nature, we absolutely can bond with individuals that we see on camera, that we see on the news at night, and so forth. But making that connection to the populations in the wild, that's very challenging, as your caller pointed out. And the difficulty is, in this world today, given the decline in the habitats that you and Naomi point to, zoos are being called upon to do two things. Public display, learn about these animals, empathize with them and what's happened to their cousins in the wild, but also help manage what's going on in the wild. And those are two inherently incompatible tasks. We'll figure it out. We're working on it. But what the needs of the individual are often incompatible with the needs of a population, and Naomi can confirm that. And nature has a way of dealing with the individual. It's often very harsh and very cruel, because nature's business, if you will, is to preserve the population. And it does that very often by making individuals within that population pay a hefty price.
Tim Zimmerman, I wonder what you're thinking here as we hear about you've got the dangers and what Blackfish describes as cruelty in captivity. You've got real problems and issues environmentally in our oceans now for the wild population of sea creatures. Does SeaWorld reemerge here as a preserve, as a place to, you know, Blackfish describes it as cruel. You can imagine SeaWorld and other zoos and places of captivity saying, look, if we don't take care of them, they're going to die in the wild. The wild is now too dangerous and dirty.
Well, I'd first like to say that, I mean, all the people I hear from about SeaWorld killer whales also seem to care an awful lot about killer whales in the wild and the environment as well. It's just that we tend to talk a lot about SeaWorld and killer whales at SeaWorld. The other thing I'd say is that it's not that the killer whales in captivity live, you know, for as long as they do in the wild or live or aren't exposed to risks as well. I mean, there are two SeaWorld killer whales in the past that have died from mosquito-borne infections that they got because they spend a lot of time on the surface and they get bitten by mosquitoes. So every environment obviously has its challenges. I think it's a little bit too much to suggest that somehow the killer whales that SeaWorld has, if it ever came to pass, you know, could not survive in a well-chosen, well-cared-for sea pen. And I think if we're at the point of saying, well, we need SeaWorld because all the killer whales in the natural world are on their way out, then we're in a true crisis. And it would be nice if SeaWorld would raise that crisis with its audiences and make that part of the educational information that they provide to audiences. I want to back up just one second quickly here. I mean, the important thing to remember about SeaWorld is it's not really about education, even though education can be part of it. It's not about research, even though they do research to help preserve their captive populations. SeaWorld is a public company. Their obligation is to make money and make a profit, and that is their first priority. So that is what colors the decisions that they make about the killer whales. The bill that Richard Bloom has proposed, as far as I read it, doesn't call for an end to SeaWorld. It doesn't call for an end to any payments that SeaWorld might make to San Diego. It doesn't call for an end to all the jobs at SeaWorld. It's really calling on SeaWorld to evolve its model a bit. And I think if SeaWorld is creative as it has been in the past, going into the future, they should be able to come up with a model that works, that's truly educational, and that also considers the welfare of the animals that they have in captivity.
Tony Perry with the LA Times in San Diego. Can you see San Diego and SeaWorld following that path, evolving to a new model here, where it's not the little pool we're used to and the bleachers huddled around it, but it's a sea pen, and people are coming for a more open experience where the orcas have more room to roam, Tony?
Not immediately. SeaWorld has had orcas as their marquee display for all of its 50 years. Yes, there are sea lions and there are otters and there are polar bears and there's also all sorts of restaurants and music and there's a roller coaster, but it is the orcas. It is Shamu, who is no longer with us except in spirit, who is the marquee. I want to point out something. The bill in Sacramento has yet to be introduced.
Yeah.
Has yet to be introduced. And it is unclear how this assemblyman from Santa Monica will get over certain hurdles. Here's one of them that may be a very tall hurdle. It is not the responsibility of the state government to regulate the welfare of these large animals in captivity.
Tony that Perry, we're out of time right there. I regret to say, but we are. I appreciate your insights today. Grace Stafford, yours from Wildlife World Zoo and Aquarium in Phoenix. Naomi Rose with the Animal Welfare Institute. Tim Zimmerman, producer of Blackfish. Thanks to you all. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.